Sportscast, June 12th, 2023. If you haven't yet, please subscribe in all our channels, YouTube, Twitch, Twitter, and Apple Podcast. You can also listen to us on your smart speaker. If you're listening on Apple Podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It will help us out tremendously. We're also on online radio. Listen to us there. Also visit our website, thesportscast.net, and also on our Twitter, thesportscast1, Instagram, thesportscast1, and you can download our app, The Sportscast, for iOS. What a weekend in sports. Nuggets are up 3-1. Pep Guardiola finally won the Champions League title after a long 10 years. Man City went to trouble. Hal Phillips, welcome back to The Sportscast.
Thank you, Santi. Always a pleasure.
What a weekend in sports. Obviously, we got a lot going on with NBA playoffs. NHL is, of course, the Champions League. But let's start with the NBA playoffs. Yeah. Nuggets are up 3-1. How a huge performance by Aaron Gordon led all scorers with 27 points. So Nuggets are distributing their leaders here. Yeah. Jokic with 23, Murray with 15. And we were talking about right before the show, the stats, like he did okay, but not enough to overcome the Nuggets.
I mean, the Heat did better than okay. If you look at the stats, they outshot the Heat from the field. They outshot them from three-point land. They were dead even on the rebounding front, which is a big challenge for them. It's just not a big team. They had 11 steals to the Nuggets too, so they turned them over, and they still got beaten soundly. It had a feeling of inevitability about it. Game four. Jamal Murray didn't score, but just kept dishing. Denver's just finding different ways to win. And when we try to compartmentalize them and find fault with what they do in one respect, they turn around and excel in a respect that we weren't expecting at all. And they've clearly been the best team in the playoffs. And it wouldn't surprise me if they closed it out tonight. And it wouldn't surprise me if the Heat come back from the dead and win on the road, because they've done sort of more amazing things in these playoffs than that.
Yeah, the Heat has never been down in the playoff yet in any series. So we'll look at the stats right now. I have it here on my notes, and we'll pull it up right now. It's a little small, but let me make it a little bigger thanks to my
my nose. Look at that.
There you go. I know a lot of keyboard shortcuts, Al. That's my secret talent. If you don't know, I'm a programmer, so obviously I know this stuff. So look at the field goal percentage, 49% by the Heat, 44% by the Nuggets. Not bad for the Heat. 50% three-point percentage for the Heat, Nuggets 32%. Rebounds 34-37. But we'll begin with the field goal and the three-point percentage. Look at those stats, Al. You're right.
It's crazy on its face, but I read another allied stat that I think I will share. I read that the only team that shot worse than the Heat from the field during the regular season was the 17-win San Antonio Spurs.
Unbelievable.
So that's what we're talking about from a regular season standpoint. And, you know, look, you can make a lot of comments about regular season stats and regular season anything compared to the playoffs. It's a whole different ballgame because the effort is so different. But shooting is a pretty fair, you know, a pretty fair indicator of sort of how you shoot. You know, there's thousands of shots go up in the course of a regular season. And, you know, the truth will out at some point there. This is astonishing how well they're shooting, and continue to shoot. And they got killed. They didn't get killed. They were beaten soundly in game four, where they lost by 13. And the game never felt in danger to me. So I don't know what to tell you. I mean, those kind of stats when they played the Celtics were enough to beat the Celtics. But the Celtics, if you look at the Nuggets and what they can do offensively and think back to what the Celtics did and how they attacked the Heat, it's like, you know, a pro team compared to a high school team. That the Celtics, their offense was so rudimentary and so haphazard. If they didn't make threes, they had nothing else to try. Denver, you know, Jamal Murray has a bad game, they just go to somewhere else. You know, Gordon has a big game. They shoot inside. They shoot outside. They have a bad shooting night from the outside. They find other ways to make baskets. That's how you win. I'm just so impressed with everything that they do with such a short bench. Although, when we talked about how short their bench was, I believe a week ago, Reggie Jackson made an appearance, which I'm surprised we hadn't seen earlier. He just was in the rotation all during the end of the season and these playoffs. So they added one guy to their rotation and win going away.
Yeah, quite a rotation by the Nuggets. But the main guy for game four was Aaron Gordon. And I got a clip from Aaron Gordon, all his not all his points, but his main plays, his highlights. And we'll check it out right now.
Caldwell-Pope. Oh, what a pass from the 28-foot line, and Gordon throws it down.
Job defensively slowing down Jamal Murray after his explosion the other night.
What a pass inside from Gordon. Beautiful bounce pass.
Murray, Jokic throws it inside to Gordon. Oh, another great touch pass, and Gordon.
Got to get in their offense quicker.
Murray, the drive, throws it up for Gordon, catches. Head fake layup is good. Aaron Gordon, so many big buckets. Lost the handle. Jokic was right there. Here comes Gordon. Gordon to Caldwell Pope. Caldwell Pope, three-pointer. Bang! Contavious Caldwell Pope.
The Denver Nuggets are one win away from their first ever NBA title. A spectacular performance on the road here in game four.
So, Aaron Gordon can score and pass. And it says, what do you think about this player, this individual talent?
Well, I've been following Aaron Gordon's career all along. He was always a productive 18-10 guy for the Magic, never played an important game in his life until he came to Denver. And he went to Denver to be a defensive sort of element that they didn't feel they had at the time. Then Jamal Murray goes down and their whole building process sort of got put on hold for a couple of years. I mean, he was out for 2 years. But what Aaron Gordon provides is the ability to match up with almost any offensive player of any size, man-to-man. He can guard a three. He can guard a five. He's 6'10 and very, very mobile. But as you can see, the man can pass. And that is something I would not have been expecting from him. From those clips that you showed, I thought it was interesting that in everything but the passes, look at where Jokic was when Gordon dunked it or laid the ball in. Jokic pulls Bam Adebayo out of the middle of that defense for whatever reason. And oftentimes they're running a second guy at Jokic to get him, the ball out of his hands. Where does that leave, Aaron Gordon? Aaron Gordon can go to the basket and get easy dunks because, who's left on the Heat who can guard someone of that size? There's nobody. Unless they're playing Kevin Love, the Heat are just too small to match up with the Nuggets. And when you run people at Jokic and try to get the ball out of his hands, he's going to find Aaron Gordon for easy buckets. And that's happened all through these play, all through this series specifically. And I think we talked about it. The Heat just aren't big enough to match up with these guys.
That's the thing. And Kevin Love, which they call him Grandfather Love, can do it every game, apparently. So
he's done, I think, pretty well. And he was also a guy they brought in at the end of the regular season. They didn't have him all year. But I think that the Heat are doing everything they can. They're battling. They're making shots. They're creating and making shots against Denver better than pretty much anyone I've seen in the West. The Lakers had a terrible time getting good shots against Denver out of a half-court set. So the Heat are doing a better job there. They just don't have enough other pieces to deal with Denver offensively or defensively.
Roster is definitely something that Hal has been emphasizing this past series. There's one play that we did not get to see. Let me play it right now. It kind of went off a bit.
Caldwell-Pope. Oh, what a pass from the 28-foot line, and Gordon throws it down.
That's an alley oop.
Yeah, but did you see Adebayo and Jimmy Butler were both at the foul line with Jokic?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and
the defense is not there.
Well, they're picking their poison. If you have to leave somebody alone on this team, I would leave Gordon alone. You can't leave Murray alone. You can't leave Jokic alone. I mean, you're going to get Caldwell Pope. We saw him hit a big three-pointer that pretty much iced the game. and Gordon iced it earlier with 27 points, you know, in the run of play. Bruce Brown had 21 points. They should be able to D up with him a little bit better. Look, I mean, you can't find fault with the Heat. They've played so magnificently. And I don't even think they have the fourth best, fifth best roster, you know, in the Eastern Conference. And they've put up a really game fight, but I think the jig is up.
Let's look at the points as Hal was emphasized a little bit. Bruce Brown Jr. had 21 points. Aaron Gordon, 27. Jokic, 23. Jamal Murray only had 15 points. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Bruce Brown Jr., 21, as we said before, 11 points. Michael Porter Jr., 11. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, 7 points. Jeff Green only had 3. Chris Braun had 1 point. The whole roster, well, not the whole roster, but only pretty much scored.
Well, yeah, and Reggie Jackson didn't even play in this game. It was a token appearance, I suppose, in game 3 that I was referring to. Michael Porter has not had a great series, but he is 6'11". And even if he's not making 3-pointers, he is rebounding in a way that nobody but Bam Adebayo can do on the opposing side. So, again, more flexibility. This is about as much flexibility as you can hope for from a 6- or 7-man rotation if you eliminate Christian Braun. It's just so impressive to see them go to work. And I don't think anyone thought they were this good, not even when the playoffs started. There was a lot of talk about how they had finished the season slowly and sort of taken their foot off the gas. Well, the foot is back on the gas. The pedal has gone to the metal. Mm-hmm. They are the class of the league.
Momentum is with the Nuggets. Let's go to the Heat, let's see what they did. Butler, 25 points. Kevin Love, 12. Bam with 20. Kyle Lowry, 13. Duncan Robinson, 12. Caleb Martin, 11. Looking at this, Butler needs to do a little bit more, doesn't he?
I guess. He's not right. He hasn't been the same player since he rolled his ankle against the Knicks. You can just tell. He does not want to go to the basket against anybody's big men. He sort of roams into the lane and goes under the basket like Steve Nash used to, you know, not really wanting to put a shot up, not wanting to challenge bigger men and looking to find people to take 3-pointers. Part of that is, you know, the NBA's MO these days, 3-pointers above all things. But he's also just not right. And I think it'll be clear that he'll come out and say so, or someone will say it on his behalf when the series is over. But, you know, what do you want him to do? He can't score 50. He did that against, you know, Milwaukee to win then that series. I don't think he's physically able to do that in this series. So, you know, it seems nitpicking to point out the players that aren't producing. I mean, Max Strus went scoreless. That guy's
gonna miss him. Yeah, that's a big issue right there.
Yep. Gabe Vincent had 23 points in the game before this. He had 2 last night. I mean, if anyone's going to get shots away, it's going to be him. And if he scores 2 points, you're pretty much dead in the water. But I just don't feel right picking on the Heat. They've played so well to get this far. They're just not that great a team.
Looking at tonight, which is game 5, what should the Heat do? Obviously, you mentioned Max Strus, Jimmy Butler score a little bit more points, but do you think getting more production from these guys can force a game 6?
Maybe if someone pulls a Tonya Harding and goes in and whacks Jokic on the knee with a pipe. Before it could be happening right now. It's 12:45 Eastern.
I remember her, by the way.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't see them. I thought the only thing that could really stop them, we talked about this, was a roster issue where a key player for Denver went down, and then they were even thinner and an even smaller roster. But I don't see anything getting in their way. How can you tell the Heat that they have to do better on the offensive side? They only scored, 95 points in the last game? They still shot 50% from the field. They shot 49% from, 50% from 3 and 49.4% from the field. How can you ask more of a team? And maybe they're just not getting enough shots up. Maybe that's the problem. Maybe they're curating their possessions a little bit more than they can afford to, because Denver just gets out and runs. We saw that with the Celtics. They got the ball and they ran the Heat every chance they got. It didn't help the Celtics because they missed so many 3-pointers. But I think we've seen, too, that Denver's – I'd like to see a stat on possessions. You know, how many shots did they actually get away? Oh, here we go. Bump that thing up so we can see what the – how many field goal attempts.
Field goal attempts.
Look at that. The Heat only took one less shot
Wow.
than the Nuggets. Can someone explain to me how they lost this game by 13 points?
How I was hoping that you would. So
I don't know. It was a funny game. It was, God, it was 48 hours ago, at least more. It was a funny game in that it was never out of hand, but Denver never felt threatened. They maintained a, you know, an 8-13 point lead all night and scored whenever they had to. And those runs that Miami would put together in the fourth quarter against the Celtics and the Bucks and the Knicks just never materialized. And here we are. I feel bad, Santi, that I can't unlock this for you, but we've seen this throughout Denver's play, you know, Denver's series. They find a different way to win every night. And if Jokic is sidelined or they let Jokic shoot and make other people shoot, they still win.
Denver is 9-1 at home. I think the key for tonight's game, one strategy might not be the best, but you got to go have a huge, like, go all out in the first quarter, lead by 20 points.
Well,
by the end of the first.
This series hasn't been that way. The Celtics series was that way. A lot of those games were out of hand. One team would sort of take over early in the game, and the other one would never really recover. I believe that 5 of the 7 games were decided in that fashion. This series has not been like that. The Denver has not blown anybody away and just run away and hid. They've just grinded it out. And but you know, the reasons they can do that is that they know they're going to get good shots every time down the floor with Murray and Jokic doing the pick and roll, or just, you know, popping the ball, you know, up top of the key to Jokic and having him survey the field. He's going to find something useful. They're going to find a cutter. They're just very difficult to stop. So there's no need for them to push the pace in order to get, you know, a bunch of shots up or achieve a 3-point barrage. You know, a lot of teams now think about, well, we got to get 50 shots up. So if we make 15, we win. I don't think they view the offensive scheme that way. And maybe that's why they're so effective, because I think a lot of teams are completely beguiled by the 3-point shot. I know the Celtics are.
You might have cracked the equation.
Mm.
We had another game this past weekend, Champions League final. It was kind of predictable, how to be honest. Like the pub that I went to, not many people went. It was not even packed. I think it was not very anticipated. But I have a clip of the goal, the game-winning goal of Man City beating Inter Milan 1-0. A goal by Rodrigo in the 68th minute was enough to beat Inter Milan, and first time Man City has won the Champions League and again the treble, and Pep has won it outside of Spain. Your thoughts?
Well, I think the idea that Pep now has finally won it is not fair. He did win with Barcelona. Everyone sort of forgets that. So thank you for reminding us. I was sort of rooting for him. He's been tortured by it. I think they've been the best team in the world for a long time and haven't been able to win this particular crown. So good on them. Look how satisfied he looks.
He's made
it. It was certainly not a spectacular display. They played just well enough. De Bruyne went out in this game and with injury, and I'm sure he was bummed. But I think, you know, one of the things that's hard for us to put into words or really understand as mere mortals is just how much pressure was on these guys to win. I mean, we've all been in a position, I think, to win. You know, we've been expected to do something, to win something. But this is the most coveted, cup in team sports, really, in the world. And they've been sort of favored to win it for 4 or 5 years now. They finally won. But I have to say, they were lucky to win it. Lukaku had a chance to tie this game in the 88th minute. Really should have scored. Headed the ball down onto the line like we're taught, but he headed it down onto the line right onto Emerson's foot. He was unlucky, I suppose, but when you're there, it's really not a matter of luck. You have to put that ball away. What a tragic figure Lukaku is in some ways. He's so talented and has had great success at a lot of places, but man, he certainly has missed a lot of goals on doorsteps in big tournaments. And this happened, I think, to Belgium when they went out. He had a chance to tie that last match that they played. I'd have to be reminded what it was, round of 16 match maybe. But you just always see him come on and gets into that position and can't finish it. I thought Inter did a really great job playing three in the back and really not nullifying Haaland. They sent him away a couple times, but never really was a threatening force. And they dominated possession like they always do, but they didn't create a whole lot of chances. And Inter could have stolen this game, or rather they could have gotten it into extra time. And that would have been a fair result, I think. So congratulations to them. But it wasn't the greatest spectacle. I did have a friend of mine who called me asking for where they could go see the game in Portland, Maine. So I know some people were watching it in bars, but not a big a crowd as you were expecting, I take it.
Not at all. Like, I remember a year ago, it was a way bigger anticipation. Obviously, it was Liverpool versus Real Madrid. And, those two have big, big supporter sections and all that. But when it came to Man City, because I don't mean, to be honest, not just to, Man City, worldwide don't have way too many supporters compared to the other big clubs, it feels like.
Well, that's an interesting jumping off point, but I don't think that they are beloved. Part of the reason is I think that it's acknowledged that they are sort of bought and sold, in that they've assembled this team in the same way PSG has assembled their team. And I think it's timely that we consider that because, in football and in golf, oil money has prevailed and is starting to really pull the strings in soccer and in golf and maybe the Olympics. I know that the Saudis want to host a World Cup now that the Qataris have done it, and they're very jealous. But when you have that much money and you're willing to spend it, naturally you're going to start, winning things and getting big tournaments and pulling the levers of power. But that doesn't mean that people love you and don't follow you. I think that City's in an interesting position because if you are from England and you are from Manchester, most of the fans are United fans. So, and United, like Liverpool and Chelsea, are global brands that have been sold to the soccer public for, two full decades now in a serious way. So City has really not come on the scene till 20, I guess they won that first title in 2012, was it, or 2011?
Yeah, 2011 and 2012, yeah.
Under Mancini, that was, they were sort of darlings at that point. But it's hard to be a darling when you are expected to win every year and you're owned by a sheikh who has unlimited cash. And, oh, by the way, all this might be taken away if UEFA's fair play rules are deemed to have been transgressed, which has only been alleged in 130 separate instances when it comes to Manchester City. So not the most lovable team, obviously a very good team, obviously a superbly coached team. But here again, it's a style that puts one to sleep. They just always have possession. They dictate terms regardless of who they're playing. They almost don't care who they're playing. And that wins them games 9 times out of 10. But they don't push any buttons for me. I'm happy for Pep. He's sort of a winning character, but I have no great love for them. The other thing, I guess, Santi, is that, it's this kind of game where people go out into public to watch in a bar. I think they used to because they had to. On CBS. Now people watch at home. This is the maturity of our football culture.
Yeah, very much. Very accessible on CBS. And the coverage was awesome. As usual. So the times have changed. And another thing that Guardiola joked around, he said he has 13 more championships to win to catch up to Real Madrid. Trophies.
even then, he's still a Barcelona man at heart. And the Barcelona fans that I know, they still consider Pep one of their own. He's been gone for 10 years now and coached the biggest clubs in the world. But once a Barca man, always a Barca man. So I don't know.
Speaking about Barcelona, it's coming. Speaking of Barcelona, Messi is going to Inter Miami. This news was after our show on Monday. I think we were predicting it at then. I think it was a huge move. I think he had no outlet or no way to get into Barcelona again. He said he had offers for other European clubs, but never happened. But looks like he's going to lay low, come to Miami, and make Apple TV Plus amazing again.
Well,
your thoughts?
It's really an interesting move. He could have gone to the Saudi League. He's already an ambassador of their tourism effort, and I think he was really smart not to go there and become just a complete shill for that country and its sport, you know, sporting ambitions. Barcelona couldn't pay him. I mean, we talked last time about, well, why does he need that money? Well, who am I? I don't know how much you need money when you have hundreds of millions. I don't know what that's like. So sure, why not? It's your choice. Go and get the most money you can. But the MLS thing is really interesting because, you know, part of me says, oh, this is not good. This is what NASL did. This is what is the great temptation for a selling league like MLS, which raises up players, talent players, and then sends them off to Europe for a price. That's perfectly responsible and honorable way to run a league. But we don't want to do what NASL did and become a retirement league. Well, look at the effect immediately. Apple is selling more subscribers. Adidas is kicking money in to cover the cost of his contract because they know he's going to sell shirts for them. And I do like the pink shirts. I liked them before and I like them now. But think of it more practically. In the war, the low-grade war that MLS fights with Liga MX, who's got the edge now? I mean, who's going to perhaps bring Messi to a CONCACAF Champions League, you know, situation or match? You know, that's going to be a huge, huge deal. Suppose Inter Miami makes the Champions League or the CONCACAF Champions League, got to go to Monterrey, you know, for a home and home. That's going to be a massive, massive game. That's just not possible. Did you see the Mexican Cameroon game that was on?
Was it TDN?
Oh, no, it was on a Spanish language channel. I'm trying to remember which one it was. It doesn't matter.
Univision.
But they had hardly anybody there. I mean, Mexican fans are not packing, you know, American Stadia anymore to go see their national team play. Will they go and see Messi play? I bet they will. I bet they will. And
I don't see why not.
Huh?
I would expect them to you know, have those stadiums packed.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of ancillary things that are going on. You know, Argentina has publicly targeted the U.S. market as a marketing open space, a white spot on the map. They can go in there and promote Argentinian football, you know, in the United States now with Messi on board. And is Martino signed up to coach them now?
Not yet, but he is the leading candidate to take that position.
Right. So I think there's a difference between Messi coming and doing all these things for MLS and, you know, Alan Ball, you know, from the 1966 England national, you know, team coming to the North American Soccer League in 1975 as an over-the-hiller. Also, Messi's 36, but he's not the kind of player who needs physical dominance to be good. I think that he'll be an effective player for another couple of years, especially in MLS, where he already slows the game down to the point, you know, where no one else can. He's going to be playing in a league where he's going to have so much time. He's going to be able to, you know, get a sandwich before he has to make a decision. It's going to be, I think, easy pickings for him. And I expect Inter to be immediately better and scoring a lot of goals quickly. When do they suppose he's actually going to suit up?
July 21st or right during the Leagues Cup, right, which is the tournament that will be MLS clubs versus Liga MX clubs.
Right.
And it'll be against Cruz Azul.
Huge. Automatically a huge game.
Yeah.
Now, will that game be played in – I'm sorry. Is it going to be played in Miami or
– It's in Miami, I believe, but someone's telling me it's Mexico, but I will have to confirm that later.
Because that's not a home-and-home thing. That's just a one-off, right?
Yeah, it's a one-off tournament. I think it's similar to the Confederations Cup. They put two groups,
right,
and then they go into the playoff tournament style.
Anyway, I saw an interesting interview with Bruce Arena. You know, I'm a hometown Revs fan, so Bruce Arena is really quite hilarious during these press conferences. He sort of alternates between complete indifference and just and dismissal of these media that are asking him these questions. And sometimes he gets, you know, sort of animated and goes on these great rants. And he basically said the same thing the other day. That some guy was trying to talk about how this was going to screw up the roster situation and the breakdown of money and guaranteed contracts and designated players for the rest of the league. And Marina's like, are you kidding me? Messi's in our league. That's good. We'll figure it out. There's nothing, there's That's no true. Downside to this. And I sort of agree with him. He could show up and just not play or get hurt and or become disenchanted with South Florida. I'm actually relying on you, Santi, to make sure that he feels welcome. But
thank you. Trust me. I got that.
Yeah. Take care of him. But who knows? It's hard to see a downside. It's pretty exciting. I mean, it's still not exciting enough for me to carry about the MLS Cup. You know, is it going to even have a bearing on that? I don't know. I thought one of the most interesting MLS items wasn't even an MLS item. This kid, Josh Winder, who plays for Louisville in the USL, which is our second division, just signed a huge deal to go play at Benfica. So he bypassed MLS entirely to go do that.
Anything's possible.
Yeah, I think that's really, really interesting development, because if MLS can't do that for young players, a 20-year-old who was just playing in Argentina at the U20 World Cup, he's one of our best defensive prospects, probably our best defensive prospect. Never played in MLS. Went straight to the Louisville. Is it Louisville City? Went straight there and got enough seasoning to sign with Benfica straight away.
You believe that?
You know, it's great. I mean, do we need Messi? Yes, but is Messi's arrival or people like him going to help that situation? No, it's going to make it worse. And watch a USL in the future, because that may be the stepping stone for a lot of these kids who are saying, well, I don't want to go and sit behind someone like that or not. I need PT. I need minutes, and I'm going to get it in the USL.
Yep. USL, a great development league as well. How with Messi coming, would you compare more to like Pelé coming to the NASL or Beckham coming to the MLS back in 2011?
I think it's closer to the latter. And, you know, I speak from some experience here because I lived through the Pelé situation and I wrote about it in Generation Zero, which you can see right over there. We talk about the 70s a lot. Pelé was in the league for 3 years, three seasons. And, you know, he packed stadia everywhere he went. And they won championships, and, you know, they had 80,000 people for those championship events. There's Mr. Winder right there. But, you know, when he left, there was no residual at all. So it's really more of a situation of Messi arriving to a league, a domestic North American league, that is just far better developed and far more evenly distributive of the talent that does exist here compared to NASL back in the 70s. So yeah, Beckham is a better example. And look at the way they paid Beckham. They paid him by not necessarily emptying the vault. They gave him an ownership stake in a franchise, which was Inter Miami. So yeah,
which brought Lionel Messi.
Fascinating full circle there. So and they've gotten very creative. I'm not sure that other leagues do this, because I know that Adidas and Puma and other outfitters do have league-wide deals with, you know, domestic competitions in other countries. But Adidas has an exclusive deal with MLS. What does that mean? Well, they're in as partners, just like Apple TV is. And they know what Messi will do for their bottom line. So, you know, they'll kick in some money to make it work for him. And, we'll see if it pays off. I sort of feel like it will, because when you arrive at 36, even though it's a four-year deal, he'll probably play two full seasons if he can. And then he will be getting on, and maybe he'll transition to a more of a cameo role. I don't know how it'll play out, because 40 is pretty old for a soccer player. But he's not a big lumbering guy. He's going to be – and he's never relied on his straight-ahead speed. He's relied on his quickness, and he's probably going to be able to do what he wants to do in MLS for 4 years at a minimum.
Yeah, and as Howell's mentioned, he does have a deal with Adidas to come to the States as well. and also gets an gets some residuals from Apple TV Plus. So Apple got involved as well. Mm-hmm. And he does have the option, what I've heard, to have an MLS franchise.
Yes. And I don't think it'll be Inter Miami, but I think, and I don't know how, God only knows how they decide these things. San Diego's coming into the league next. They're the 30th franchise, but presumably there'll be franchises that want to change and will bring in someone like that. I mean, let's just take an example of a struggling franchise that I can't name off the top of my head. So Real Salt Lake. Okay. They've seen better days. Maybe their ownership wants to vacate. Well, they can't find a buyer at the number they want. So they invite, maybe Messi plugs into that. Automatically, Real Salt Lake gets his juice as well. And maybe people want to go there where they wouldn't have in the past. It's an interesting situation. When you compare it to USL, which is sort of a traditional division where there's relegation and there's no place to graduate to. There's no promotion, but
open system.
Right. Yeah. It's an open system. I don't know that you can do all this. You've got 20 owners in League One of USL. Can they coordinate in this way? Probably not. I mean, the single entity ownership of MLS allows them to do certain things. But as we've seen, USL is able to do a lot of things based purely on the traditional, beating my opponent, in terms of talent development and talent, identification. And, what was the payday for Louisville, sending that kid off to Benfica? I think it was $1.7
million. $1.2
million.
Yeah. Plus incentives.
Yeah. Incredible payday for Louisville. I mean, they are now the most, financially well-heeled team in their division. Don't don't ask me who's in that division with them.
This is pretty good for Louisville. Congratulations to Josh Ender, and hopefully he'll excel in Benfica, another club that really sells off their players to bigger clubs. So who knows? We might see him in a bigger club in a few years.
Who knows? I did watch the under 20 World Cup. The U.S. team looked fabulous through the opening rounds, and I think they won their first round game, lost in the quarterfinals. To who did they lose to?
Wasn't it Uruguay?
Did they lose to Uruguay?
Let me double check on that.
I think they did. They lost to Uruguay, and they did not look, outclassed by Uruguay, but Uruguay won the championship, so they obviously lost to a fine team. But Winder actually had a terrible, terrible mistake that led to the second goal. The U.S. fell behind, pressed for the equalizer pretty much the whole, last 45 minutes, and then with 10 minutes left, gave up this terrible own goal and pretty much decided the game. I felt terrible for him. I feel a little bit better for him now.
Well, there you have it. Soccer news, NBA. Now let's go into predictions. How tonight, game 5, Nuggets at Heat. Give me some hope or some realism.
Geez, it's hard to see the Nuggets losing, but I'm going to pick the Heat just because I love you, Santi. I want you to be happy.
I'll take it. I'm picking the Heat as well. I think when they're back in the corner, they might pull it out. Panthers at Golden Knights, another Florida team down 3-1, going to Las Vegas. Who you got there for tomorrow night in Vegas?
I think the Panthers will win because they're tough. I watched that game, and it was one of the great endings to any Stanley Cup playoff match with a fight. They were down 3-0. They made it 3-2. They were on the doorstep with a chance to tie that game in the last 5 seconds, and they couldn't tuck it home. And then a fight broke out right in the goal mouth. It was spectacular. I love the Stanley Cup playoffs.
Stanley Cup playoffs is pretty exciting. I've become more of a hockey fan lately, but don't count me for the future. to confirm, the U.S. did beat lose against Uruguay 2-0. Then Uruguay beat Israel in semi, and then they beat Italy 1-0. So it's a classic historic World Cup teams, aren't they?
They are. Uruguay, of course, won the very first and second World Cups. They have four stars on their shirts, they won the first World Cup, and then they won in 1950, but they have four stars on their World Cup insignia, their logo, because 1930, 1950, But then there were two tournaments that were actually sponsored by FIFA in the 1920s.
Yeah, the Olympics.
In the Olympics.
Count that one.
That's right. They won
I believe it was like 1928.
It was 1928 and 1924, if I'm not mistaken. And they are recognized as world championship tournaments by FIFA because FIFA organized them for the Olympic Committee. So that's why they have the four stars. But obviously, always a great tournament team. Always, I mean, it's a small country, 3 million people.
Very small.
And just turns out, you know, they turn out outstanding footballers. I mean, it's no surprise. They're right between Argentina and Brazil. They have the South American influence. They have, you know, European, Portuguese, German influence, you know, that's all over South America in those areas. Why wouldn't they be good? But they play really skilled football. They are very hard to defend. And now they've got a whole crop of world champions at the under 20s. So look out come 2026.
Yep. No worry about replacing Luis Suarez and Cavani.
No, they were talking about Suarez maybe coming to MLS.
I know. I don't want that. I think he's past his prime, way past his prime.
Well, this is the problem, Santi. Once you start doing this, then like, if somebody else wants to come and be anonymous and make millions of dollars and play at half speed.
We're going to become like the New York Cosmos.
Well, the Cosmos won a lot of things. That wouldn't be the worst thing for Inter Miami fans.
That's true. Classic Cosmos. I'm not sure who owns the naming rights. I heard it's just been flying around everywhere.
It has. It's been bought by what was the old NASL, the North American. It was a different NASL in the 2020 teens. I don't know who owns it now. I don't know.
Yeah, her was some English company. I don't know. Anyways, Hal Phillips, we got so much going on in sports. What is the best way to reach you online to talk to you about?
You can reach me at this Twitter handle at Mandarin Hal. And you can reach me at www.genzero.halphillips.net. That's my book, Gen Zero. Just got shortlisted for the Benjamin Franklin Independent Book Publishing Award. It didn't win, but it was shortlisted. So check it out at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com.
There you go. Check out Generation Zero, the past of U.S. soccer. How far has gone from then to Messi?
Yes.
It's only gets better from here.
I think so. It's just onward and upward.
You can reach us at thesportscast.net or thesportscast1 on Twitter and Instagram. We'll be looking at the NBA finals tonight and, of course, Stanley Cup tomorrow night. So looking forward to sports. And, of course, soccer gets a little bit dippy. Not really. For us, we get to see the Gold Cup and Nations League
which, on the 15th. U.S.-Mexico on the 15th.
Yeah. And there is a rumor. You might have heard of this already by now. Cherundolo getting an interview by the U.S. for the U.S. coaching job.
That would be interesting. I think he'd probably be a pretty good choice. I sort of think that they're going to bring in Jesse Marsh.
I hope so.
But either way, I think it's fine to put an American in that job, give him a chance to sink or swim for the next year and a half. And yes, if it's not working out, go get somebody with a little more experience, maybe European pedigree. But I wouldn't mind Cherundolo.
I wouldn't mind him either. Anyways, that's all we got. Hal, I'm excited. You're excited. Thanks for coming on to the sports.
Always a pleasure, Santi.
And this was your update.